May begin when ready?
Yes, sir.
You want to reserve any time for rebuttal, ma'am?
Yes, I would like to reserve 2 minutes, please, for rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am.
May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Robinson. I represent the appellant, Tammy T. Ware. And, Your Honors, this is the result of a divorce matter that was in Henrico Circuit Court. The premise is, and we began with the March 28, 2016 final decree. The trial court in the decree ordered that the marital residence was marital property and that that residence was to have been sold.
Let me see if I can help us all kind of get to the main point here. And again, help me as I work through the facts, because the facts are a little bit cumbersome. It seems that Judge Yaffe decided that he was going to try to maintain the status quo for a while until this property, which is the big deal here, was actually disposed of, sold, or whatever. And it appears that in the interim, certain orders were entered to allow your client to stay in the home, and there were certain things done to sort of maintain the asset. I believe the appellee here was actually paying the mortgage and paying certain things related to the mortgage.
Actually ordered to pay the mortgage and the HOA.
Right.
The homeowners.
Right. Yes, ma'am. And at some point, there were some problems with the disposition of the asset.
Yes.
I think that's the most progressive way to say that.
Yes.
And the trial judge said, okay, we're going to go ahead and get this done, brought the real estate agent in and did all the things necessary to kind of get things moving.
Correct.
And I got the impression from reading everything here that the trial judge was not very impressed with your client's approach to dealing with the disposition of the property.
On two occasions.
Yes, ma'am.
The first occasion would have been, sir, where the property was not maintained in I would say a showable fashion.
Yes, ma'am.
So that the realtor could show it. The second time she was, if we can use the term, a holdover type tenant.
Okay.
Without being a tenant.
And so then the trial judge decided in the final disposition saying, okay, we need to get things moving. We need to get this resolved. This case has been pending for too long. We need to resolve things. And sort of started dividing things up, saying what was owed, what had been paid, who was responsible for what. And I believe at one point made a mistake to your client's disadvantage, and
Absolutely.
Counsel for the other side said, Judge, we can't do that. And the judge actually gave a credit back to your client for something that she should have been entitled to.
Yes.
With our standard review and the judge specifically looking at the factors necessary to kind of decide things, where would you point to that the judge didn't meet his responsibility?
Abuse of his discretion.
Yes, ma'am.
Following, ma'am. The house event, let me back up a minute, withdraw that partial statement. At one point, which would have been in April of 2017, the judge was quite concerned about Ms. Ware still being in the property. The problem became, and we brought this to the court's attention, and it is in the transcript, even though the court ordered the property to be sold, there was no money for the lady to move out of the marital residence. Absolutely no funds whatsoever. In addition to that, and that was argued in the court prior to the actual sale of the property, in addition to that, the child, the minor child of the parties, was still in school in the neighborhood as well. Private school, but the private school was located close to the marital residence. The big elephant in the room at the time and during the hearing, Your Honors, was that the money was lacking for this lady to move out of, pack up and move out of the marital residence. At that point and at that hearing, the court awarded Ms. Ware $10,000. Now, that is an expected deduction because the court made that announcement in court. All right, Ms. Robinson, I will give you...
I'm going to front you $10,000.
I will give you $10,000 for your client to then get out.
Mm.
She was given 10 days to then remove all of the marital belongings that the husband no longer wanted, the appellee no longer wanted. So she was out within that 10-day period at the exact moment the trial court told her she had to be out. During that time that she was supposed to be preparing to move out, the house was being shown by a realtor. She cleaned up everything in the home to make it showable or make it available to the public to see to make a determination for purchase.
Didn't really facilitate that by not adhering to the realtor's requirements for times to show the house and the like.
No, she did only one time did the relative miss her, when I say miss her, was not able to gain entry into the property. But at the time that the relative was not allowed to gain entry into the property.
Well, the factual finding here was that your client was purposely delaying the sale of the home.
Not purposely.
No, well, that's the factual finding by the trial court.
By the trial court, yes.
And so we take the evidence like most favorable. You know, we don't revisit those facts, basically. So,
no.
You know, if that's the case, and then it seems to me, in terms of what you're asking for, maybe I'm missing something, but it looks to me like at the hearing, the appellee took responsibility for the late mortgage fees, which is what you're asking for, and that the homeowner fees would be split 50-50, which is also what you're asking for. So I'm trying to understand what you're asking for, on where the court erred on appeal, if you got what you asked for there.
We were initially asking for the 50-50 split pursuant to the statutory equitable distribution. That was the bargain. But when we get to the division, the actual division, in the last hearing, of the $155,000, $155,404 actually, that the house was the net proceeds from the sale of the property, what happened was the mortgage payments were late, and the mortgage payments, Tammy Weir had nothing to do with the mortgage payments. She had no control over those mortgage payments. But the assessment as to who would bear the burden for the late fees, it was deducted from her, which should not have been. Also deducted from Tammy Weir was the HOA fee. The HOA fee, which is the homeowners association fee, was 50% was deducted from Tammy Weir as well.
Well, she was living there rent-free, correct?
Rent-free. But she still has, under the statute, she still has a 50% right to the proceeds.
Well, I understand that, but my point is she was living there over a period of time without paying a cent.
That is correct.
Okay.
So, if it's our bone of contention is this, Your Honors. If there is going to be an equitable distribution of the debt as well as the asset, the marital asset, 100% of the mortgage payments, which ended up being a total of $36,494, that was a 100% credit to the defendant, the husband, appellee.
Well, he paid them, right?
He paid them. But if it's marital property, should he receive, in our position, he should not receive a 100% credit. He should only receive a 50% credit. Marital debt is divided 50-50. The marital property assets were divided.
The concept of equitable, by its very nature, assumes fairness. And so it assumes that we're going to try to do something that's fair to everybody. He's shelling out money for a property that he doesn't get to live in, and she's in the property, not paying anything. So why isn't a trial judge's determination that she gets some of the credit for doing that equitable?
She gets 50% of the credit for doing that and maintaining the property.
So what you're saying is that, correct me if I'm wrong, ma'am, what you're saying is that he was responsible for paying half the mortgage, he shouldn't get credit for the totality of those mortgage payments.
Exactly.
But only should get credit for half of those mortgage payments.
Yes, sir. Exactly. Half of the mortgage payment. If it's going to, if you're going to slice the apple in half, give one half to each person, then just because the other person has a capability of doing something, why give them the whole apple at the end? She should have received 50% of that $36,000.
Well, what he's saying is if we're slicing the apple in half, she's eating her half of the apple and now wants to take half of his.
No, she's eating her half of the apple and wants him to eat his half of the apple. Why take 100% of her half of the apple and give it to him because of his ability to pay? And that's what happened in the trial court. The next thing, there were late fees, Your Honors. Late fees for the payment of the mortgage. $3,154 in late fees. If she's not responsible, was not responsible for paying the mortgage, had no control as to what date that monthly mortgage payment was going to be made, why should she be responsible at all for late fees?
Well, he paid those.
He paid those, but it was deducted from her. $3,154. And the HOA fee, the homeowner's fee, the husband, Mr. Srinivasan, gave testimony that he had not paid the HOA fee since October of 2015. Again, she had no control over whether he paid, didn't pay.
Well, she was supposed to pay half of that.
He was supposed to pay half.
She was.
She was.
She was.
Right.
The entire amount was deducted from her. What we have is...
Where is evidence in the record of that?
That
it was deducted from her?
As a matter of fact, $2,263 was deducted from her for the HOA.
That's half, right?
That was half. But why should she have to be responsible
for that? Why should she be responsible for half of the homeowner's fees?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Your Honor. And what happened, what happens when you look at the order of the court in terms of the distribution is this. At one point, the trial court treated Tammy Weir as if she were a homeowner, having 50%, and should be awarded 50%. At the other end of the spectrum, Tammy Weir was treated as if she were a tenant.
A rent-free tenant,
yes. And if you look at the HOA fees, no tenant pays HOA fees. That is the responsibility of the homeowner.
But she got half of the value of the house, or of the place.
No, she did not get half of the value of the house because what was deducted?
Well, I mean, they started with a half.
They started with the one half, yes. They started with the one half. And then it ended up by having 100% of the mortgage deducted from her, by having 50% of the HOA fees deducted from her, by having 100% of the mortgage late fees deducted from her. What the bottom line was $121,490 to the husband, the appellee before this court, $33,913.42 to the appellant.
Ms. Robinson, I didn't ask you at the beginning, but you're at 2 minutes and 49 seconds. Did you want to save some of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, I did.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
May it please the court, my name is Kimberly Fitzgerald Austin, and I represent the appellee.
Ms. Austin, help me, if you can,
sure.
Understand. Now, I appreciate the fact that your client was paying for everything.
Yes, sir.
And the paying for everything, based upon the parlance we use in these kinds of cases, was basically to preserve the marital asset. In other words, if someone doesn't pay, then it's going to go to foreclosure, and then neither one is going to get anything.
Correct.
Essentially, that's what's going to happen. And I understand that there is obviously some benefit to Ms. Robinson's client to be able to live in the home while all this is going on. But does that... by and of itself generate to your client the benefit of getting credit for everything that was done to preserve the marital asset?
Well, Judge, our position is that the reason that he got, it wasn't a benefit, it's that all of those additional payments and fees that he got credit for were only incurred because of her contemptuous behavior. And that's clear on the record. We never would have been in front of the court had she complied with the court's order, which
so let me see. Let me stop you and see if I can get this organized in my own mind, because I think Judge Alston hit the nail on the head as far as I'm concerned as well. So, do I understand correctly that your position is essentially that the circuit court's intent here was to divide this asset right down the middle? Had it been done immediately, that's what would have happened. But because of your client's dithering and delays and contemptuous conduct.
Well, not my
and
client.
I'm sorry, the appellant's conduct. I'm sorry, I apologize. The expenses that were necessitated to preserve the asset, is just as Judge Alston referred to it, should have been borne basically by her entirely because it was her conduct that resulted in the necessity for it. That's
correct, Judge. And as I'm sure the court is aware, the trial court has broad discretion in their determination of sanctions on a show cause, and it's clear throughout the record she was found in contempt multiple times. I think one of your honors quoted the quote where the court said that she willfully violated the court's order and that she purposely procrastinated and delayed the sale of the house. So that's correct. On the issue of, I think the mortgage payments are a little bit distinguishable from the other expenses because the court failed to address who would pay the mortgage payments in the final decree. Everyone acknowledged that was an oversight, and we actually agreed, and it's in the record that wife agreed that husband would pay the mortgage and get credit. So I don't understand how they're objecting to that this point.
It was the trial court's determination with regard to the disposition of marital estate made in the nature of a contempt determination, or was it made in the nature of an equitable distribution determination? Because I think you're probably on firmer footing if you call it contempt as opposed to equitable distribution.
Well, I think it's both, Your Honor. Initially, it was an equitable distribution determination, which was that she's going to get 50% of the house proceeds. Again, the house was ordered to be sold in 30 days or listed for sale in 30 days. So initially it was in the nature of equitable distribution, but then once she refused to comply with that order, we ended up having, I think, 4 hearings on her failure to follow the court's order. At that point shifted to the contempt issue.
In the crafting of Judge Yaffe's order, did he craft it in the context of contempt or equitable distribution?
He did. So I can go through the orders because I noticed in her reply brief she stated that it wasn't on the record that it was part of the show cause, but it is. So the rule to show cause was entered on August 23rd, 2016. The first order entered September 29th, 2016, states that it was upon husband's show cause. The next order, entered March 22nd, 2017, states upon a review of husband's show cause. The next order, entered April 7th, 2017, stated again on a review of husband's show cause. And then the last order...
I get you there, but the dispositional order of how these assets were distributed between the parties, was it made in contempt or was it made in equity?
Yeah, that was the last order, which was the August 28th, 2017 order, states upon the show cause. And in the transcript, the judge stated, and this is joint appendix page 811, the judge said, "Ms. Robinson, your client was responsible for delay after delay after delay, which is why this house wasn't sold. In fact, I held her in contempt." So it's clear from the record that the reason that he made this final decision about the fees and expenses was...
Okay, and I'm with you there, but in my prior life, in addition to being a juvenile court judge, I was a circuit court judge. Mm-hmm. And whenever I would enter a contempt determination or contempt citation or whatever you want to call it, there would be a dispositional context to that. In that dispositional context, I would say, so-and-so is found in contempt of court. As per that contempt finding, I direct blah, blah, blah.
So the disposition of the contempt was continually carried out until the house was sold.
And were there factual findings made by the trial judge regarding the delays?
Yes, absolutely. And they're in the record in the orders. The judge repeatedly finds that
it was the wife's
correct
conduct.
Let's switch to the strongest argument that Ms. Robinson has on the assets, and that's the late payment. There was nothing that the wife did to cause the late payment of the mortgage, was there?
Well, again, if she had complied with the court's final decree, there wouldn't be any late fees. But beyond that, Judge, I could have missed it, but I could not find anywhere in the record where it was stated how much, if any, credit he was given for late fees. Mr. Srinivasan testified that he paid the $36,494 towards the mortgage. That was the transcript, joint appendix 765. But I could not find it in the record anywhere where there was an amount specified that was late fees. The exhibit for the mortgage payments was introduced at that hearing, but it was not made a part of the record for this court.
The equitable theory is that had the house been processed the way it was supposed to be, there wouldn't be late fees. So because there are, they're all chargeable to her.
Correct. And that goes back to, I think, the court's discretion in a contempt
proceeding. The problem with that is that, it seems to me at least, the problem with that is that, you know, we're speculating because, you know, obviously if everything proceeded the way the court intended, the house would have been listed for sale within 30 days now. We don't know how long it would have taken to sell, but obviously until it sells, you owe the mortgage payments. Now, once, of course, the sale goes through, then the mortgage is satisfied.
Correct.
So how do we know, you know, what supports the notion that the mortgage payments. You know, where do we draw the line as to what would have been, you know, a normal situation versus, I mean, the house might have sold in one day, or it might have, you know, taken, you know, 6 months to sell.
Right. I agree, Your Honor. And the other, I guess, issue to that point is that there was a period of time from when the final decree was entered until when the order was entered with the agreement that husband would pay, that no one knew who was to be paying the mortgage. And I don't think it's clear from the record whether when the late charges were incurred. So they could have actually been incurred at that point in time before it was agreed in order that he would pay it.
So your position is that the late payments of 2026, based upon a reasonable interpretation of the court's order, related to time that she should have been out of the house or the house was sold, thereby generating the late payments?
Correct.
Okay.
What did Judge Yaffe find on that point?
On the late fees?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't think the record is clear as to the amount that he gave Mr. Srinivasan credit for any late fees for the mortgage.
2026. Trial court ruled that the parties did the math. The amount of the late payment is 2026. He overruled appellant's argument that she doesn't have to pay this.
And I don't know that the trial court explained his reasoning beyond that.
I'm sure it's in the record, but how many months were the payments late? Do you know offhand?
I don't. Again, the mortgage statement that was introduced was not made a part of the record.
Okay.
Unless the court has any further questions on those issues, I'll turn to our request for attorney's fees.
Okay.
And we are requesting an award of fees pursuant to Virginia Supreme Court Rule 5A30B3.
Talk about trial and appellate attorney's fees.
We're actually just talking about appellant, the fees for this appeal. Our client was awarded $5,000 in the circuit court, which I think it's important to point out we agreed to that. The trial court actually stated that he thought we should have gotten all of them, which was $14,000, just because, again, of her contemptuous behavior. But we, Mr. Srinivasan, for years and years and years, has just been trying to resolve this matter. So he thought by agreeing to that, hopefully it would avoid any appeal, which it did not. And I think it's important to note also that this is their fifth appeal from the same underlying divorce case. None of their appeals have been found.
It's the appellant's fifth appeal.
Correct. Yeah. None have been found to have merit.
To this court.
Correct. I think three were withdrawn.
The case name was familiar to me.
Yeah, I think three were withdrawn, and one other issue went to oral argument, but the trial court was affirmed. So we would be asking for fees.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Ms. Robinson, you have about close to 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. There is no question that Tammy Ware is a frequent flyer before this court, but one of the reasons...
Are you always the pilot, or does she have different pilots?
No, she's the pilot. The client tends to sometimes where there is a serious thought about error having been committed by the trial court, the client tends to be the pilot. Now, in listening to the questions that the judges have asked, may I remind the court that even with the contempt charges, there were only two that Judge Yaffe pronounced in court, one of which, and the most recent one, was April the 7th, 2017, held Tammy Ware in contempt of court and for willfully violating his prior court order. At that time, there was a contract pending for the sale of the property.
Do you believe
that? So even though she was there, there was a contract pending.
Do you believe that Judge Yaffe's determination was made in the context of contempt or in the context of equitable distribution?
In contempt, but he did not cite what exactly she was being held.
But each order did.
Each order cited contempt, but did not specify what the punishment or the punitive.
That puts a different spin on things, because I think where Judge Alston's point is clearly that if this is a contempt citation, it's a sanction, then the only legal issue is, did the court have authority to impose such a sanction for disobedience of an order? That's different from whether or not the court erred in an equal equitable distribution analysis for these payments. So if this is a sanction, that takes it completely out of the equitable distribution, and we're talking about the court's inherent power of contempt and whether or not it exceeded that authority in imposing a particular sanction.
But here's where it runs amok. We don't know what it is.
Well, the order says what it is.
The order says she was held in contempt.
Well, the court speaks through its orders.
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. The court speaks through its orders, but the court does not say what it's going to do as the repercussion for having decided that
she was
to be.
Well, I think the orders do.
Not really. And the reason why I say, Your Honor, not really, is because in one of your orders, it was in the April 2017 hearing where the court says, I find you in contempt of court, but I do not think that this is punishable today by sending you to jail. So it was never clear. The only other issue that becomes clear is what is left to do, which would have been equitable distribution.
Well, let me stop you. Hypothetically, if the court had said, and this, I know you dispute this, but just for the purpose of my question,
yes, sir.
The court has said, if Judge Jaffe has said, I ordered you to get this house for sale, ready for sale within 30 days, you dragged your feet. You did not do that. That has cost an extra, pick a number out of the air, whatever it is, in late mortgage payments. As a sanction for your violation of the court's order, I am finding you in contempt, and the sanction is you are responsible for X number of months of late mortgage payments due to your dilatory conduct. What is wrong with that from the standpoint of the court's authority to impose a sanction for contempt?
Nothing, my lady, may I still respond?
Yes, ma'am.
Nothing is wrong with that. The exception to that is the court did not rule that. And the mortgage payments had begun to be late when we had the 2016 trials, hearings.
All right, ma'am. Madam Smith, we give you a little bit of extra time because you were talking with Judge Humphreys. We'll come down to Greek Council.
Yes, sir.